Welcome back to the Religious Studies Project. This is the second half of my interview with Professor Bruno Latour. In the first half, we talked more about his career path and his earlier work, talking about the nature of belief. And I'm asking, have we ever been modern? Is there really a difference in the way that we see the world now between what there was in the medieval period? In the second half, we talk more about his forthcoming book, Rejoicing, which is, I would argue, his most overtly religious yet, and I mean religious, not just relating to religion. But also we talk about his Gifford lectures on facing Gaia.
I would just like to jump in there, David. Yeah. With regards to the Gifford lectures, I think it would be really interesting if people knew that they could download and see and find out more information about Gifford lectures from www.ed.ac.uk and actually take part in some of this conversation on a wider
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely, that's a great suggestion. So without further ado, we'll put the link on the page, obviously, but without further ado, here's the second half of my interview. Before we get to the natural religion aspect, I want to talk in depth about you, your Gifford lectures in a little while. Let's, before we get there, talk about you, the way that you describe how belief works in the modern cult of the factish gods, I think is very interesting, and I think of enormous use actually to reconfiguring religious studies away from theological assumptions, shall we put it that way. So let's start with the idea of the fetish, and when the colonists encountered, you know, on the east coast of Africa, and they encountered these barbarians worshipping their fetishes and their response to that. When they were asked, the story I liked was when they were asked, you know, is it real or is it manufactured? And their response was, well, both.
Well, there are two. You might not want to confuse the argument. Belief is very simple. The question of fetishes is much more difficult.
Okay.
Belief is just addressed in the wrong key, a question which has nothing to do with the right key. So it's as stupid to talk about belief in religion as to expect when you order a pizza by telephone that the pizza will come by telephone. And pizza, you can order the pizza by telephone, but it's not going to come through the telephone. It will be delivered.
Okay.
So belief is the idea that you can actually address the question of gods and all these things by using a key which is used to understand climate change, lots of other things, electrons, atoms, to build a faraway world. So the building of a faraway and access to the faraway world is a fantastic and fabulous activity, which is called basically science. Now, none of that, absolutely none of that, is useful to try to capture what is completely different from the faraway, which is the close at hand. In fact, a way of addressing that, provide and procure and produce by doing it in the time you do it, neighbors, proximity. Mm-hmm. Which is, in French we say le prochain, which is actually a nice word, because in English you only use neighbor for the gospel prochain, proximus in Latin.
Okay.
Which is a nice word. You have just neighbor. Neighbor looks a bit tame to me.
It's the guy that lives next door.
Yeah.
Right?
But to make it a prochain, to make it a proximus, that's something is strong. So on the belief question, it's extremely simple. There is no. It's a complete category mistake. So every person who asks the question, "Do you believe in God, Trinity, and etc.?" the answer is wrong question. We'll wait for something else. It's just wrong address, because you try to use a vehicle to access the far away when it's actually addressed to something which produces close at hand. So either it does it or it does not. Right? I mean, absolutely useless to say you believe, I know I don't believe, maybe I believe a little bit, etc. So that allows to put belief out of the question of religion. It's a complete category, I think. Which doesn't mean that faith, of course, is important, but faith is precisely what is produced by being addressed.
Okay, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you.
Faith and belief are, I mean, that's a traditional religion theory. I mean, lots of theologians have worked out, including one other. Now, the other the fetish question is much more delicate because it's integrated and part and parcel of the second commandment. So it's the consequence, which is very odd, that you should not make your God, which is itself a misreading, so to speak, of the other God, the one which should be defeated. And this is what Assmann calls the mosaic division. Our gods are not fabricated. Your gods are fabricated.
Yeah.
So it's a double mistake, because of course our gods have to be fabricated, because if not we would have no access to anything. So you need the one to say our gods are not fabricated, have the temple, the whole paraphernalia of rituals, the huge building of a people, later the church, I mean all of this. So we are constantly in a false consciousness, constantly denying that actually their God is also fabricated. And of course it's a second mistake on the others, because the others have absolutely no qualms about the fact, as you said, of being fabricated, because that's why they are good gods.
Yeah.
Because fabricating them well is the whole idea of this other thing, which has nothing to do with religion in the post-Mosaic definition, but which has to do with people building deals and a lot with organizing the cosmos, with therapy, with entering into kinship. I mean, all these things are anthropology.
Living in the world, in the now,
So the difficulty when you enter the question, so, and you write that belief is of course linked to this question of the second commandment in some ways. So when you approach the question of religion with this enormous double denying, I mean, sort of, you deny that your own God is fabricated, and you think the others are naively believing in their fetish, the world is going to give you very skewed answers, let's say. Because you will be constantly denigrating, and that's the cause of, I mean, the problem is your hero here, which is your Knox iconoclast. I mean, I wrote a whole 1,000 book on that, editing a whole book on iconoclasm. That's the problem of iconoclasm. It's constant, and it comes back constantly.
Yeah.
It comes back constantly. The iconoclasm crisis is integral to Christianity because of this huge misunderstanding. We are not supposed to fabricate our gods, and we do, of course, no other way.
Yeah.
And the others are supposed to be naive believers, and we are not.
Yeah.
The point, of course, is the naivety is unequally distributed.
Yeah, I mean the whole question of belief. I mean, there's a lot of there's a big move in religious studies at the moment away from talking about belief at all, which I think is a very good idea. I mean, I don't always agree with the approaches. I mean, David Morgan's got a sort of approach he calls material religion, where you can't talk about theologies, and all you can really talk about is the physical aspects, you know, the things that are produced and the way that people act. Yeah, Graham Harvey's work on animism, I think, is quite interesting in the light of what you've written about fetishism, where he kind of has reformulated animism rather than the sort of 19th century version of animism as this kind of naive belief that there are spirits which occupy everything and that they're, you know, the world is filled with, you know, there's no distinction between you know, the world of tables and the world of thinking people. He describes rather animism as a set of manners to relate to persons, some of which aren't human, which I quite like. And there's no idea of belief, it's just...
Who is this?
Graham Harvey. I think actually, you know, he's going the same direction as you, but from a, you know, from a different direction. But anyway, I just it reminds me very much of that. But let's, the other side of your argument about belief, though, is that for the anti-fetishists, if we can call it that, maybe I'm getting the terminology wrong. But those of us in the secular West, in the moderns, as you say, that we see these fetishes as, you know, the gods or whatever, as these empty fairy objects onto which power is ascribed, and yet we as agents. We accept as agents that we're being moved by these other mysterious forces all the time, and we don't see any conflict there. Have I understood what you're saying correctly?
No, I mean, all of this nonsense about being from a religion which is supposed to have a god that is not fabricated when it is fabricated, and accusing the other of being about naive believers is transported exactly in the same structure without any sort of nuance,
mm-hmm.
and just an extreme version of it in what is called secular critique, because the secular critique, the figure of critique, is actually transporting all of that almost untouched into a double this double dispute you allude to, which is you are naive and you are just projecting. It's a notion of projection, anthropomorphism,
mm-hmm.
naivety, etc. And on the other side, of course, the second critique, which is that we are acted by the force. I mean, this has disappeared a little bit in the last 20 years, but which is still there. We are acted by the forces, market, capitalism, and so on, without having any say in it.
Uh-huh.
So the two, of course, are unconnected because of his denial about what it is to be fabricated, which is itself at the heart of the theology, a conundrum of theology, which is in the whole long, long elaboration around image of God,
mm-hmm.
human as the image of God, the whole notion of creation, the whole notion of mastery of human, and that, now it's of course one shot further on the relation of humans with nature. Again, are we situation of creation, stewardship, mastery, on etc.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a. This is what I call the sort of poison of constructivism, so to speak. There's a primary constructivism, which is at the heart of religious tradition of our Christian tradition, and which has been completely secularized, but with maintained with the same difficulty in critique.
Yeah.
Critique is a complete inheritance. It's a complete inheritance of this conundrum. Plus the science. So the critique has inherited the whole difficulty of religion, Christian religion, plus a naive belief in science,
mm-hmm.
which is makes their life difficult.
Science with a capital S, I'm presuming.
Sorry?
Science with a capital S.
Yeah.
The great God science. That's actually a very nice lead into something I wanted to ask you. You talk about the difference between the sciences and science with a capital S. I wondered what you would think about J.Z. Smith's famous quote about that. Religion is essentially an invention of the scholars who are studying it. I'll read you the quote. It's from his paper, Imagining Religion. I can't remember the date offhand. while there is a staggering amount of data, phenomena of human experience and expressions that might be characterized in one culture or another by one criterion or another as religion, there is no data for religion. Religion is solely the creation of the scholar's study. It is created for the scholar's analytic purposes by his imaginative acts of comparison and generalization. Religion, with a capital R, has no existence apart from in the academy.
That's a social constructivist point. It might be, I don't know enough of a field to know if it's a, but it's a normal fact that scientists have to build their object. I mean, this is perfectly legitimate. You could say exactly the same thing by replacing religion by protein or by gene, which would have, I mean, gene is the invention of genetics, because it's perfectly legitimate. If you are a social constructivist, you would see this quote as a rejection of the truth of the objectivity of the object being studied, because constructing the object it can be badly constructed or well constructed, of course. And I don't know enough of this guy to know if they criticize the bad construction, but the fact that it's constructed by scientists is a complete cliche. I mean, yes, of course. I mean, how would you do otherwise? Now, is it well constructed or badly constructed? Do you integrate, which is for me is quite important, do you integrate the difference, which I think is very, very important, between mosaic and non-mosaic tradition, which is Chantal. Ils sont là, les gars?
Non.
Ça s'est bien passé?
Yes.
Il t'a fait du bien?
Oui, oui, très bien.
Ah, c'est bien. Je te retrouve là-haut dans...
D'accord.
Sorry.
No problem. Are you okay for time?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Sorry, what?
Whether it was constructed...
Oh, yeah.
Well,
the fact that it's constructed is perfectly normal. All disciplines, scientific disciplines, construct the object. So there is no reason why what you study would not do. But does it integrate... How does the... phenomenon is, and I would be interested in the good construction or bad construction question around does it highlight enough the very strange mosaic tradition, which has to be this connection between the people and the end of time, which is neither what has been constantly elaborated by this tradition of which Christianism is a constant elaboration and re-elaboration, and which takes a new significance now with the eruption of ecology. So this is very, very different from other type of, which is often mixed in religious study, of everything from Buddha to fetish to admiration for the queen is lumped together because it's just out of the ordinary. But, I mean, this is too much, much too fast. And sacred, profane is not a good indicator for my own. So the fact that religious studies is the result of academics is good. I mean, how would you do it differently? I mean, you can't possibly imagine that religious study would just come in the street and get into the lobby of this hotel. It has to be made. But the question is it well made?
Yes. Of course, it's not a question of is it true or is it constructed, but it can be both at the same time.
But maybe this gentleman thinks in the classical anti-fetishist mood.
So
it's a critique position. But also this critique are often triggered by, on the other side, with sort of idiotic positivist who insists that religion studies in the street. So sometimes this is academic fine. It's not very important. What is very important is, can we distinguish types of beings? Because that's where the only thing we can bond with. Can we address this type of being in the right language and vocabulary? And if you speak badly about God, or your God, I mean, you're damned. So, I mean, this is quite an important issue. You have to speak well. You have to listen to that right tone.
Let's move on to the Gifford Lectures. It's entitled Facing Gaia, Six Lectures on the Political Theology of Nature. And it is an inquiry into the idea of natural religion and its relationship to the political discourse at the moment, would that be fair to say?
What?
To contemporary political discourses about globalism and holism and environmentalism and these kind of things. Okay, so, well, we've unpacked religion, but natural. Is this a straightforward category, as it sometimes seems?
Oh, natural is not a straightforward category at all. No, precisely it is. But it's the easiest to criticize, you see, because that's the whole work of science studies has been to, and anthropology has been to sort of put, show that it's a coded category, as anthropology say. So a lot of lectures in this tradition of the Gifford lecture, which is a very specific, highly local, Scottish interest in treating the boundary between science and religion. The idea was that the coded category was religion.
Yeah.
And the obvious one was nature. And I showed, of course, that is, I mean, but I guess why they invited me, that it's obvious that nature is also a coded category, a highly specifically historical and highly contingent one, which has been completely washed out by the ecological situation anyway. So the idea that we are in a nature, or that we should live out of nature, has been completely pushed aside by the Anthropocene argument. And the Anthropocene is not a combination of a nature and human tradition. I mean, as I showed, I mean, we distribute everything, including the human.
Let's assume that the listener hasn't seen the lectures. Perhaps we should, perhaps you should tell us. The Anthropocene, we mean this phase of existence on Earth in which human activity is affecting the environment, would that be?
It's the moment when the action of humans take a dimension, what it was called before, funnily enough, the human dimension, takes a size which is comparable for lots of reasons with geological forces. Something which resonates slightly differently actually here in Edinburgh, in the very landscape of Edinburgh, with all the glaciers, traces, volcanoes. There's an interesting connection between Edinburgh and geology, as well, which maybe inspires some of the divinity professors here, which is interesting. I don't know if it's the origin of a Gifford lecture's argument, but there is something interesting here in the interest of theurgy and ecology. So this is why I was very pleased first to be invited, because my great hero has given the lectures as well.
Indeed, yeah, you speak you speak very fondly of William James in several of your publications, actually. You in Why Has Critique Run Out of Steam, you talk about your desire to speak like William James with a stubbornly realist attitude. Obviously William James' classic varieties of religious experience was based on his Gifford lecture series in, I think it was 1902. Was that a major motivation for you to?
In James, it's not necessarily this one which I prefer, because it has a slight tendency to phenomenologize religious experience. It's not the one, I think, where the James pragmatism has been most successful, and it shows some of the limits of it. It was a great Gifford lecture for me, is Whitehead. I mean, this is where the most important book probably ever produced by this series, and the one which will have most lasting influence, but probably more than the one by James. But of course, James has written many other things.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I just like the connection
it's why I was so pleased. And but also I was pleased because of a natural religion argument that completely seems completely outputted. in large ways was outmoded, because it's the eternal question. I mean, is science reconcilable with religion? I mean, it's so boring. Nothing has come out of it in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Gaia connection, so to speak, and the return of the question of ecology, and the absolute necessity of mobilizing religious minds, it takes an urgency and novelty and an actuality which I think is very good.
Mm.
So that's why I was very pleased to be able to dive into this question, which I would never have done without the spur of
the impetus. I interviewed Bron Taylor about 6 months ago. His most recent work is kind of theme is the idea that ecological concerns have become a kind of religion in itself. He talks about green religion, a dark green religion, and for him, he sees it as the sort of ultimate heir of Darwin. Essentially, is that religion or religious speech is kind of being reconfigured around the figure of Gaia, if you like, or of a sacralization of the planet rather than of distant gods, if you like. I wondered if you'd come across this.
I don't know, but I mean, my argument is exactly the opposite, is that Gaia is precisely secular, and that's why it's so surprising to scientists and to religious people. I mean, secular is not necessarily a good word, but it has this anti-Gaia view, which is shared by lots of people in religion studies, actually, that is paganism, that is religion. Paganism is a complete category mistake, because they don't realize, I mean, they don't get into the science first, so they don't realize how original Gaia is as a scientific entity, and they try to lodge it in the global argument as another of these global things, which, coming from religious, from Christian, is quite funny, because they are themselves completely obsessed by the globe, as I showed. And they they sort of accuse the paganism is the straw and the, I don't know how to say that in English, parable of
take the mote from your own eye, yes. I think it is,
because the sacralization of a globe is indeed a very, very big and important part of Christian theology. So there's a sort of obsession with the globe, which is precisely out of which Gaia and the Anthropocene, very specifically, because of these constant loops, sort of extract us and has to be taken very, very seriously. Gaia is a very interesting figure. It's nothing to do with paganism. It's a very, I mean, in my rendering of it, it can, of course, be misinterpreted in many ways as a return of a globe.
Yeah,
but I think that's exactly what it is not, because it has a history, and this history is actually pretty compatible with lots of interest in other historical movements. One of them is, of course, the spread and of this thread which are associated with the predication of the gospel. So the two historicity, in other words, if you take religion out of its global influence and if you take Gaia out of its global obsession, you get the two historicities, which I'll try to do tomorrow, actually, which is, I think, very, very interesting. I mean, there are lots of... But my argument here is in natural... is in political theology, so it's... It's not a theological argument, but political. How to bring politics back into this question of ecology, which have been completely emptied of politics because of the epistemology that is often used for it. And since this same epistemology is also used for theology, in a very rationalistic definition, you could not expect much from natural religion. And this, that was the two first lectures.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, well, tell us a little bit more about that political situation then. And you talk a few times about well, it's the title of the series of Facing Gaia. You know, what does it mean to face Gaia, and how would we go about doing such a thing?
You can say in a language which is understandable by Christians is that it, back to the question of incarnation, what does it mean to be of this earth? And that's very, very different history than being human. So basically, the political theology of those who have an earth is different from those who were moving out, so to speak. I mean, trying to look the supernatural and upload themselves away, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Still, I mean, of course, it's not Christianity, but it's still a version of Christianity about that. But when you are religious, you want to get out, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
To go up. And what is the whole Christian religion? What you want is down here.
Yeah.
On the proximity, on the precise location here. So I think my colleagues have. And that's where the difficulty is. Is that the whole religious idiom, which was turned to in many of the metaphors and rituals, and is now forced to reconsider very seriously what it is to be here. Mm-hmm. So that the traditional argument that what's the use of having a soul if you lose the world, I mean, it's reversal of the famous gospel injunction.
Yeah.
What you use to save your soul if you lose work.
Yeah.
So it's an address which is made to all religious people, and especially to Christians, which is very interesting. But I don't treat the theology. There are a lot of people like Northcott who knows that much better than I do. But I think I can add the political theology point, because that's what is missing often from me. Mm-hmm. The whole question of ecology and creation and all that is full of nice feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But ecology is not about nice feeling, it's about war and peace. So it's a tougher feeling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for this interview, and it's been nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you've just been listening to the second half of David's interview with Bruno Latour, and I hope that you feel a reaction to that. So we're just going to cut everything short this week, because this is the second of our podcast this week, so we don't want to burden you with our delectable banter.
Indeed. Keep it for next week.
So from Louise.
Goodbye.
From David.
Ciao.
From myself, auf Wiedersehen, and
thanks for listening.